Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, bienvenidos, welcome to Business 123, Introduction to Investments for Spring 2012. My name is Frank Baiano, Italiano. You can call me Frank. Baco is fine with me. If you want to say my last name, you have to wave your hands around in the air when you say it. Baiano! We are so glad that you're taking our course, and we are very glad that you're listening to this, or maybe listening and watching, because it means you've got a machine that can understand this, these MP3 files or these flash files, or maybe you're on an Apple mobile device and you're doing this through iTunes University. We're still working on that, folks. I'm pretty sure we're going to be able to get that working by the beginning of this semester, but I'm still, you know, a little leery. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Every chapter will have presentations that you can listen to, that you can view and listen to, so you have no excuse for not studying. Put these on a CD, play them in your car, put them on your MP3 player, and listen to them, okay? All right, let's get started. You ready? You ready? The entire semester starts with a single slide. Slide number two. I like to start with a perspective. First, it is a gloomy moment in history. Never has the future seemed so dark and incalculable. The United States is beset with racial, industrial, and commercial chaos drifting we know not where. Of our troubles, no one can see the end. If you ask people where this is from, they might say, oh, I saw it on Weasel News, Skunk News, no, Fox News, right? Or, no, I'm teasing. They might say the Great Depression, World War II, but in reality, this is from 1847. Did they have serious problems then? Yes, the Civil War is about to start. Do we have serious problems now? Yes, yes we do. But throughout history, humans have survived and thrived. Yeah, so I'm going to err on the side of the positive. Because it turns out the positive people, optimistic people, are happier. Then pessimists, the pessimists will tell you they're just more realistic and they're better informed. But, hey, let's get started. Chapters 1, a little bit of 3, and some lecture notes. Folks, what we've tried to do here is create what I believe should be the contents of the first chapter of an Introduction to Investments in Securities textbook. Okay? The first chapter in our book is actually quite good. Goes into a little too much detail on computing the return, but that's fine. But it does a great job of describing history, they call it a brief history of risk and return. It talks about the eternal struggle of risk and return. But then they wait until chapter 3 to do an overview of securities, overview of investment types, which I believe is a mistake. Plus, they don't do a very good job of it in Chapter 3. They spend far too much time talking about investments that are not even, in my humble opinion, investments. So, as you read Chapter 3, if you get too bogged down in the details, just ignore it. Just put it aside. Come back to it later, maybe, but make sure you understand the overview of investment types from the presentation. Okay? And then we'll spend a little bit of time at the very end of this chapter, very end of this presentation, discussing short-term investments. The book does not really discuss short-term investments, but we need to deal with them and get them out of the way. All right. But first, the first thing we're going to take a look at is an introduction to an investments, and that's our first session, which will take us up to slide 14 or so, and here it is, folks, said in a fabulously concise and a witty quote by Mr. Kenfield Morley, J. Kenfield Morley. In investing money, the amount of interest you want should depend upon whether you want to eat well or sleep well. Now, I wouldn't use the word interest. I would use the word reward or returns, okay? But this guy said it all in that one little sentence right there. Because you're never going to get away from this, folks. If you want high return, you're going to take high risk. If you want no risk or low risk or be able to sleep well at night, you're not going to get a whole lot of return. There's no way to get around that, as we shall see as we go through this chapter. All right, slide number 4. We start from the very beginning. Every once in a while in a face-to-face class, you'll have one or two students who are really savvy with investments. They've been doing it quite some time, and they start throwing out terms, and people's face turn bright white, blank, and stares, face you. And I try to say, now remember, folks, we start from the very beginning, so you don't have to know any of this stuff. All you have to know is in this presentation, okay? And so remember that. We're starting from the very beginning with slide number 4. An investment is any vehicle, sometimes called instrument, into which resources can be placed with the expectation that it will generate positive income or that its value will be preserved or increased or both. You understand? You can't get much more basic than that. We are putting money into some kind of vehicle or instrument or whatever you want to call it, such that we believe we're going to get some kind of cash back, some kind of positive income, or that its value is going to stay or increase, or hopefully both, right? And so we call these investment returns or investment rewards, right? Either one. I usually use the term return. And there are two different types. There's income, interest, dividends, rent from real estate. I like the term cash flows. What kind of cash flows are you going to get from this investment? And then there's the increased value or decreased value. And we call that capital gains or capital appreciation when the value of your investment goes up. And of course, we call it capital losses when the value of your investment goes down. Ooh, yeah. Investments come in all shapes, flavors, and sizes. And so what we're going to do now, folks, is take a look from 40,000 feet up. All right? In this first session and the first presentation, we're going to take a look at the different attributes of investments. And I want you to write these down. And what I do in the face-to-face classes, I have them all on the board by the time we've gone through the first 12 slides. And then we're going to, at the end, ask you, okay, look at this investment. Tell me some of the attributes for that. Look at that investment. So start writing these guys down to jog your memory. At the highest level, investments can be broken down into three categories. Securities, property, and personal investments. Now, this term securities tends to drive people nuts. In fact, we used to call the class Introduction to Investments and Securities. And people would say, well, I'm not a criminal justice major. I don't need to worry about security. No, not that type of security. A security is an investment that represents debt or ownership or the legal right to acquire or sell an ownership interest. And a better term is financial investments. So most of when people throw out the term stocks and bonds and mutual funds, they're talking about securities. You might have heard of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Right? The exchange is where the securities are bought and sold. The other type of investments are real assets, real property, personal property, precious metals, automobiles, art, collectibles, real estate, hard assets, tangible assets. You might have heard the term commodities, right? And these things are not pieces of paper, right, that represent debt or ownership. They are the real thing. The building, the land, the automobile, the art, or the gold, or the silver. And then the third type is a personal investment, education, travel. And it turns out, folks, that for most all of us, college is often the best investment a person will ever make. And why is that? Right, because of the expectation of increased income, plus just, you know, happier, healthier well-being. It turns out the higher educated you are, there's an extreme, but in general, the happier you are and the healthier you are. Interesting, right? And as it says in the bottom of the slide, this class concentrates on securities. Slide number 6. Now, we're going to break up again. So we're going to have more attributes. So write these down underneath the ones we just did on slide number 5. Primary assets and derivative assets. Now wait a minute. What does that mean? Well, there are two types of primary assets. There's debt, where you lend your money to somebody else. Funds lent in exchange for interest income and the promised repayment of the loan at a given future date. And these are bonds. These are short-term investments such as savings accounts. And equity. Equity means ownership. So you own the business, or you own the property, the real estate property, and stocks, partnerships. If you've taken Business 120, Introduction to Business, you understand about sole proprietorships, partnerships, and real estate. These are equity investments. You're the owner. Now, the derivative assets are securities that derive their value from an underlying security or asset. Huh? What? They're not the actual asset. They derive their value from some other asset. That's why they're called derivatives. Folks, all you have to know about derivatives until the very end of the semester is what's on this slide right here. They derive their value from an underlying security or asset, and they are normally highly speculative. What does that mean? You're gambling. That's what it means, folks. The speculation is the industry's word, the investment industry's word, euphemism, if you will, for gambling. We don't use the word gambling. That's an ugly term. No. We say it's a speculative investment. Well, you know what? Some people in the industry, myself included, do not classify derivatives as investments. We use the term speculations. They are speculations, which again is a fancy term for saying you're gambling. And the examples, and I want you to remember the two major examples. There are many, many, many others, folks. But the two major examples of derivatives are options and futures. So that is all you have to know about derivatives for now. You know that they derive their value from something else. They are dangerous, highly speculative, very risky, and two examples are options and futures. Sound good? Can you remember that? All right. Next slide. Slide number 7. Now we're going to categorize investments into what are called direct investments and indirect investments. Now, what does this mean? This pertains to who has control over the investment. When you have a direct investment, your name is on the investment. You control the investment. You can buy or sell the investment as you wish. So real estate, stocks, bonds, your name is on the investment. An indirect investment is an investment where somebody else is in control. You have limited control, or more likely, no control over the underlying investment. And the great example of this is a mutual fund. When you invest in a mutual fund, somebody else is deciding what investments to buy. you buy a stock mutual fund, well, the mutual fund managers, they decide which stocks they're going to buy. You buy a bond mutual fund, they decide which bonds. You understand? Now, as it says at the bottom, sure, you can buy or sell your shares in the mutual fund as you wish, but you don't control the underlying investment. And this is the same thing is true for real estate investment trusts. That's what that REIT, how it's pronounced REIT, and that's what it means. Real estate investment trust is it looks like a mutual fund, but it invests in real estate instead of stocks or bonds. And so you basically give your money to these people, and they buy the properties, and they manage them, and they sell them and buy them and collect the rent, and then turn around and give you the proceeds. And the same thing is true with a limited partnership. There's usually a general partner or partners that are controlling what's going on, whatever it usually, it doesn't have to be property, but often it is. And then you, as a limited partner, you just, whatever, if you make money, great. They send you some of the proceeds. If you lose money, oh well. But you can't call up your mutual fund or your REIT or your limited partnership and say, I think this is a great investment. You know, they'll go, oh, thank you very much. Can't wait to get you up the phone. Slide number 8. Now, investments are also categorized by where they are based. And there are 3 categorizations that you have to understand. The first one is very straightforward, domestic. Well, what does that mean? It's based inside the United States. Very simple. Foreign is based outside the United States. We don't use the term foreign as much anymore. Mostly what you'll hear is international. But some people will still use the term foreign. So these companies or whatever investment you're investing in are based outside the United States. And as it shows you here in this little formula, global is equal to domestic and international. So international, foreign is not the same, does not equal global. Be very careful of this subtle distinction. Global means todo el mundo, right? Everybody, including the United States. International means outside the United States. Now, these distinctions used to be very important. But guess what? Right. The world is global. For good or ill, for good and ill. You know, some things are great, some things are not so great. And so, these distinctions are not as important as they used to be. They're still important, and you still should know them, but they're not as important as they used to be. And here's a great quote. The world is a very small place these days economically. And oh boy, is this true. This is from Forbes. 65% by value of the parts in the Ford Mustang come from the United States and Canada. 90% of the parts in the Toyota Sienna, which is built in Indiana, by the way, come from the United States and Canada. So, which is the more American car? I mean, folks, can you get any more American than a Ford Mustang? Yeah, buy a Toyota Sienna. That's, you know, I was down in Mexico last year, and I was checking things out, Central Mexico, Mexico City, and Guanajuato, and Querétaro. And it was just so wild, you know, there were all these Chryslers and Fords and Chevys that were built in Mexico. And then there were Toyotas and Toyotas and Hondas and BMWs that were built in the United States. right. In fact, let's take a look at slide number 9. And you know all these companies, right? You know all these companies. You've heard of all of them. Can you tell just from looking at them which ones are domestic and which ones are foreign? Can you? You can tell a few, right? Which ones do you think are domestic? Which ones do you think are foreign? Well, we're going to walk through each individual one. Budweiser. Mother Bud. All right? Beer. Where is Budweiser based? Well, it turns out it's foreign. Huh? Yeah. It was bought by a Brazilian-Belgian conglomerate called InBev. And now they call it Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch InBev, or InBev Anheuser-Busch. I'm not sure what the name of it is anymore, but yeah, it's no longer an American company. How about Shell Oil? Shell Oil, is that based in the United States? No, that's foreign. That's actually Royal Dutch Petroleum. It's a company that's a Anglo-Dutch consortium, based in the Netherlands and based in the UK at the same time. But in reality, folks, it's a company that's a country all its own. They basically own Nigeria. Right? How about Ben and Jerry's ice cream? Huh? What do you think? You know, it used to be based here, but now it's foreign. How about Farmers Insurance? Oh, that's foreign. It's owned by a Swiss company. ARCO! Atlantic Richfield! AM PM. Well, it's actually owned by British Petroleum now. Well, in fact, after the oil spill a couple of years ago, they took away all the BPs. I used to say ARCO, a BP company. They took away all the BP companies, and I think they're bringing them back. How about Gerber BBs? Oh no, that's foreign. Also, Carnation. That's foreign. Cup of Soup. Yeah, that's foreign too. Now, what about Fox? Now, come on, you can't get more American. They wrap themselves in the flag, right? Fox News, all those liberals need to leave the United States because we're the real Americans. No, that's actually a foreign company. It's based in Australia. I love it. It's so ironic. You know, here they are accusing people of being anti-American, and they're not even an American company. Seagram 7, that's based in Canada. Bayer, that's Germany. Vaseline, that's foreign. Friskies is foreign. Motel 6, yes, it's very French, Motel 6. And then Union Bank of California is Japanese. Volvo, and wait a minute. Volvo and Saab, they've got to be foreign, right? Actually, no, they were domestic. Well, not anymore. Now they're, well, actually, Saab is gone. And Volvo has been bought by a Chinese company. You see, Volvo was owned for many years by Ford. Saab was owned for many years by GM. In the debacle of a few years ago, GM couldn't get rid of Saab fast enough, and now it's gone. It's literally shuttered its doors. Volvo, Ford was able to sell Volvo off, and let's hope they survive for their sake. But Saab, I'm not a big fan of these cars because of their expense, but they're beautiful cars if you're ever driving them. And so it's sad to see Saab go. So what do you think, folks? What's the takeaway? Right. You know, the world is foreign. And there are some people who are, you know, very upset about this. They're worried. They're frightened. They're fearful. But in reality, I think this is good. Personally, I think this is good. Why? Because there is only one world. And when you do business with people, you learn more about them, you come to accept them, and you don't want to bomb them. You don't want to bomb your customers. It's not good business, right? Oh, well. Slide number 10. Speaking of global investing, here are the top 18 countries according to per capita income, right? In alphabetical order. Per capita income, meaning how much money does each person produce, right? And earn. Or, I'm sorry, income, earn. Which country had the best average annual return over the past quarter century? What do you think? It's got to be the United States, right? All the other ones, they're all socialist countries with health care, with universal health care. They're all commies, right? No, well, actually, no. Who? Sweden. What? Netherlands, Denmark, Switzerland, France beat out the United States. Give me a break, all right? Look at the bottom. Japan. Yeah, Japan's been in a funk for a long time. And notice that the United States 9.5, it's not bad, you know, not too bad, not great, not fantastic. But don't worry, we'll come back to this. But the return of the stock markets in the developed world over the last 25 some odd years has been 9.2%. Not bad. Slide number 11. Now, we are going to also categorize investments by the time frame. And you've got to know your time frame. Before you make an investment, you must know your time frame, because that, more than anything else, is going to dictate where you are going to invest. And the industry uses these general guidelines. Short-term investments up to a year or so, intermediate term 2 to 5 years, and anything 5 years or more is considered long-term. Now, I take a little longer view. I think of 1 to 2 years, maybe 3 years is short-term, 3 to 5, 6, or even 7 for intermediate term. And for me, long-term is 7, 10, 15 years. Warren Buffett, and we'll come back to Mr. Buffett often throughout the presentation, or throughout the semester, he says if you're not going to buy a stock, if you wouldn't hold a stock for 10 years, don't even think about buying it for 10 minutes or something. He was referring to the day traders who are buying and selling all day long. He thinks you want to hold it for a good long time. But hey, sometimes you don't have a long, sometimes you don't have a whole bunch of time. You need this money in 6 months. Well, then you got to go with something short term. You understand? And we'll come back to this when we discuss short term investments in detail at the very end of this chapter, very end of this section. Slide number 12. Now, investments are also categorized by whether they are liquid or illiquid. And no, we're not talking about how much beer we got for the weekend. We're talking about the ability to easily and quickly convert our investment into cash. A liquid investment has a market where there are people ready to purchase your investment. Change of ownership happens quickly. And some examples of these are stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and REITs. Illiquid investments are difficult, maybe difficult, sometimes not, but usually it's difficult or it takes time to convert your money into cash. The market for the investment may be small, or the change of ownership happens slowly, or both, and real estate is the big one here. Real estate is an illiquid investment. It takes time to sell a property. Partnerships are often illiquid. It's difficult to find somebody to buy your share of the partnership, or sometimes there's rules that make it very difficult. And then collectibles are often illiquid. Sure, that baseball card collection might be worth $1,800, but how many people really want to buy it from you? Not that many. So that's illiquid. Make sense? Okay. Now, risk. Yeah. And we got to talk about risk, folks. There's no such thing as a risk-free investment. Risk is the chance that the actual investment returns will differ from the expected returns. Now, here's the problem. When we normally think of risk, we think of the possibility of suffering harm or loss or danger, right? Isn't that what you think about when you think of risk? But in the investment community, risk often takes on other attributes. And it turns out, as we'll see, it's not easy to measure, right? But for now, all you have to know, and we're going to go on this in detail in the third session of this chapter, is the higher the expectation of investment returns, the higher the risk level. That's what you need to understand. Do you want to eat well? Or do you want to sleep well? And here are my guidelines for the risk return spectrum. Now, the book is a little bit more generous. I'm not. Low risk is 2, 3, 4, 5%. Moderate risk is 5 to 8%. High risk is 8 to 12, and anything greater than 12, in my humble opinion, is what we call speculative. Meaning, as we said, a fancy term for gambling, right? I certainly do not consider it investing, and many other people do not consider it investing. You're gambling. So, folks, if you want to get 8, 9, 10%, you're going to have to take on a lot of risk, right? Especially now, these days, my goodness, my goodness, my goodness. So, what I hope to show you is that there's no good way to measure risk, but we can get a handle on it with some types of measurements that show us our expectations, what we can expect to happen, so that when it does happen, we're not as, what's the word, I don't want to use the common word, freaked out. We're not as upset, we're not as panicky, okay? So for now, all you have to understand is that the higher the returns you want, the higher the risks you're going to get. Slide number 14. Okay, so do you have all these attributes, all these characteristics, all these categories written down? Now let's take a look at some very typical types of investments and see if any of this makes sense. What type of investment is a Bank of America passbook savings account? What is a passbook? Yeah, that's the old term. Some banks still give you a little passbook. But, yeah, you go to a Bank of America and you plunk down some money into a savings account. Is it a security or is it property? It's a security, right? It's not something physical, right? It's not a property or gold or anything like that. It used to be a little passbook, looked like a passport, but now it's all electronic. And you put your money in there, they pay you interest, not much, and they promise to repay your money back. In fact, it's insured by an agency of the federal government. Is it debt or is it equity? Well, you think it's debt, right? No, equity. It's debt. What? Right, you're lending your money to the bank. So the bank is holding your money, and they promise to repay you. So you actually are investing in debt. It's kind of weird, right? But that's what bonds are, folks. That's what bonds are. So we get to play the part of the bank, right? And we'll discuss this later on. Is it direct or indirect? It's actually direct because our name is on the savings account. So it's direct. Is it domestic or, Bank of America? Yeah, it's domestic. Where is it based? Do you know? It's based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hard to believe, huh? How about short term, intermediate term, or long term? As we shall see, a savings account is a short term investment. Some people put their money in there for the long term, but that's not the best choice, in my humble opinion. Is it low, moderate, or high risk? Oh, boy. Low, low risk. A savings account is low, low risk. And what do you get? Low, low return. Is it liquid or illiquid? Very, very liquid. You go to the bank, say, I want my cash. They'll give it to you that day. Now, it's funny. They don't want to give it to you as cash. We'll discuss that later on. They want to give you a check, or they want you to transfer it someplace else because they don't keep that much cash in the bank. So, yeah, if you said, I want my cash today, they'll say, well, can you come back tomorrow? Because we don't have enough. How about Nestle's food? What is Nestle's food? Is it security or property? It's a stock, so it's a security, right? You're buying a piece of Nestle's food. Debt or equity? Well, that's the definition of a stock, equity, right? It's ownership. You are owning, you buy one share of Nestle's, you own a piece of that company. Is it indirect or direct? Direct or indirect? Well, if you went down to your brokerage firm, your name, and looked at your account, your name is on the title, so it's a direct investment. Is it domestic or foreign? Nestle's, Quick, chocolates. It's actually based in Switzerland. It's the world's largest food company, and again, it's a company which is a, I'm sorry, yeah, it's exactly, a company which is a country all on it to itself. It's all over the world. Second largest food company in the world? Kraft, right, based outside of Chicago, I think, United States. Short term, intermediate term, or long term? Well, folks, this is a good question. Normally, stocks are long term. But when you look at a company like Nestle, you could actually say, yeah, this is an intermediate term investment. But in general, when we talk about a stock, we're almost always talking about long term investments. How about low, moderate, or high risk? Well, usually we put stocks in the high-risk category, but Nestle, yeah, why don't we sneak it in there in the moderates? Then not low, folks. All stocks can fall very quickly, and so we'll put it in moderate. But usually we put stocks in high-risk. Is it liquid or illiquid? It's very liquid. There are millions of investors around the world, maybe not millions, but hundreds of thousands, who will be happy to buy your Nestle stock from you. So it's very, very liquid. How about Southwestern College Propositions AA and R bonds? What are you talking about, Piano? Well, if you walk around the campus, you may see some signs that say, thank you, South Bay voters, for your Proposition AA and Proposition R bonds. And what are these things? These are loans that Southwestern College has made. And we're using the money to fix up the campus because some of the buildings are over 40, getting close, 50 years old now. And we're going to build the corner lot. We're going to have a whole new complex there. And where do you get that money, right? You have a bake sale? No. You've got to borrow it. And how do you do that? If you're a municipality such as the Southwestern Community College District, you go to the voters and say, hey, we'd like to make these loans. Will you allow us to do it? And the voters better understand that they're going to be paying higher property taxes for the next 30 years. I think it's $50, right, for every $100,000. And so, a couple hundred dollars a year for some people. So we are able to borrow that money, and we pay interest on it. Southwestern College does. And we pay back the principal over time. And that comes from the voters. Is it a security or a property? A bond is a security, right? It's a representation of debt or equity. And is it debt or equity? I almost gave you the answer. Yeah, it's debt, right? You're buying a loan. That doesn't make any sense. Well, it does, folks. That's what banks do, right? They buy and sell people's loans all the time. So when you invest in a bond, you're actually playing the part of the bank. You are lending your money to some entity, and you're going to get interest and your principal paid back over time. And we'll discuss bonds in detail later on, so relax, that's all you have to know for now. Direct or indirect? Well, your name is on the title of the bond. They used to give you a document with your name on it, but not anymore. No. It's all electronic. Is it domestic or foreign? Well, look, Southwestern College is domestic. We're based in Chula Vista, so it's a domestic entity. Although some people call us Tijuana Tech, there is a Tijuana Tech, Instituto Tecnológico de Tijuana, so no. Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? Well, bonds can be long-term, they can also be short-term, but normally they're more intermediate-term. They're not too risky, but they have a little bit of risk involved. So there are ways for bonds to be long-term, intermediate-term, and short-term. And we'll discuss that later on. Low, moderate, or high risk? What do you think of Southwestern College? You think we're risky? Nah. Low to moderate, depending on interest rates, and that's a big if, you know. When we get into bonds, we'll discuss the relationship of interest rates and bonds. Are they liquid or illiquid? Oh, they're pretty darn liquid, right? There are many investors out there who love muni bonds and would love to lend money to Southwestern College in exchange for interest and principal paid back over time. So don't worry, you can sell your Proposition AA or Proposition R bonds. How about a duplex in Spring Valley? You rent one side, you live in the other. Is that a good investment? I think so now. Is it security or a property? Well, of course. Here's the example of a property. Exactly. Real estate. Is it debt or equity? It's an equity position, right? You own the duplex. Now, the bank that gave you the loan or lent you the money, for them, that's a debt position, isn't it? The mortgage is a debt position, but for you, you own the property. That's an equity position. Is it direct or indirect? Well, you go down to the county admin building and your name is on the title. All right, you're responsible for it. Is it domestic or foreign? Spring Valley is still based in the United States, folks. Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? In general, we should consider real estate as a long-term investment. Now, for a while there in the noughts, 2004, 5, and 6, up to 2007, people were looking at real estate as a short-term investment. Flipping the wrong way to look at real estate, folks. And those people got burnt badly. If you have a long-term perspective, I firmly believe that right now, what is it? You know, beginning of 2012, it's a great time to buy real estate. But having said that, next year it could be 10%, 20% lower, right? Because it's still very fragile, very, very fragile. But for the next 5 to 10 to 15 to 20 years, I think real estate's a screaming good deal right now. Is San Diego becoming less desirable to live in? No, I don't think so. Low, moderate, or high risk? Well, again, it depends on your time frame, right? If you're thinking you're going to be able to flip this property in the next couple of years, well, lots of luck, folks. But if you have a long-term perspective, I think this is fairly moderately risky, personally, because you get to live in one side, that's all, unless you want to live outdoors, right? And you get to rent out the others. And you should be able to find renters fairly easy in San Diego. Is it liquid or illiquid? Well, here's the bugaboo with real estate, isn't it? Real estate is illiquid. It's a very often difficult thing to sell. And it takes time. During the craziness of the mid-2000s, these houses were selling in a weekend. You put your fair sale sign up on Thursday, by Saturday or Sunday it was sold. But that's not now, and some people are having a very difficult time selling their property. How about Qualcomm? What is Qualcomm Corporation? It's a stadium, is it? No, it's a cell phone company. No, it's not even a cell phone company. They don't make cell phones, they make the things that go inside the cell phone. Well, they don't even make the chips anymore. Somebody else makes them for them. Qualcomm developed the system called CDMA that Verizon and Sprint phones use. CDMA, what does it stand for? Can't do much of anything. No. Code division multiple access. That's the system that the cell phones use, Verizon and Sprint, to talk to one another. Okay, AT&T, T-Mobile, they use a different system developed by Nokia. And they're based here in San Diego, one of the largest employers and one of the largest corporations here in San Diego. They have the naming rights to the stadium. They're going to change it to Snapdragon. Figure that one out. That was a game my son and my wife and I played when he was young on the computer. Is Qualcomm a security or a property? It's a security. When you buy a share of Qualcomm, you're buying a representation of ownership. So is it debt or equity? I just gave you the answer. It's equity, right. How about direct or indirect? Your name's on the title, so it's a direct investment. Domestic or foreign? Well, they're based here in San Diego, right? Where do they make most of their money? Outside the United States. I know. Figure that one out, right? So is it really a domestic company? Yeah, technically it's based here in San Diego, but it makes more money outside the United States than it does inside. Short term, intermediate term, or long term? Well, it should be, in my humble opinion, considered a long term investment because it's a stock, and stocks are long term. But then, this technology stuff, it changes quickly, so you have to be careful.
low, moderate, or high risk. Well, again, it's a stock, and it's a technology. Right? It's I would consider it a high risk investment. I'm not saying it's not a good investment, but it's just you know how volatile the industry and the technology is. Is it liquid or illiquid? It's a stock, fairly liquid, folks. There's plenty of people out there who want to buy your share of Qualcomm from you. Okay, last example. Loan to Uncle Harry. Oh, every family has an Uncle Harry. T.O. Lucas, right? Security or property? Well, it's a security in that it represents an investment. What type of investment? Debt or equity? It represents debt, right? You made the loan. You expect him to pay you back. Direct or indirect? Yeah, you're stuck with it. It's direct. Is it domestic or foreign? Well, so far, Uncle Harry still lives in the United States, but who knows when you're going to get a good postcard from somewhere else around the world. Is it short-term, intermediate-term, long-term, or forever? Yeah, I think it's forever. I don't think you're going to get your money back. So is it low, moderate, or high risk? I think it's more than high risk. Yeah, I think it's... Forget it. Liquid or illiquid? Yeah, right. You think any of your friends or your family members will buy your loan from Uncle Harry from you? And then Uncle Harry will own them? No way. Yeah. So, what do you think, huh? It's pretty straightforward, isn't it? You don't have to worry about all the talking heads on CNBC Financial and all the websites for finance and. You just have to know these attributes. Go back over and revisit them and make sure you understand them and understand the juxtaposition one versus the other. And so, as we said, we start from the beginning and this is what you have to know. When we come back, we're going to review an overview of investments, okay? We're going to discuss the different types of investments now in more detail, but still flying over the landscape at 30-some thousand feet. What do you think? I'm excited. I hope you are. Listen to this again. You know you need to. Write down your notes every day. You need to do a little bit of studying. That's how we learn. Repetition. See you next time, folks.